listening to The After Deck.
What's up, everyone? It's Kate Chastain, and you are listening to After Deck. On this week's After Deck, I'm talking to Chris Brown, the Below Deck Chris Brown, that is, and we're going to be recapping episode 6 of Below Deck season 5. I want to ask him about his exit from Valor and what he's been up to since, and I want to know how often he's been mistaken for the other Chris Brown. I also have a very special surprise guest stopping by, and here's a hint, he does not love breakfast. So I've had an amazing weekend since the last time you guys heard from me on After Deck. I went to see Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen speak at their show called AC Squared. They were in Tampa. And for my best friend Will's birthday, I got us tickets. So we drove about 3 hours over the west coast of Florida and checked into a hotel. And I had no idea what to expect from the show because if you try and Google it, there is no videos anywhere of that any fan has taken of their show in any city. It's because they tell the audience at the start of their show, please don't take any video, because they really want to keep it secret. They're sharing very personal and intimate stories from their life. And so I was surprised and had no idea what I was going into, but it was hilarious and informative. And you really got to see a good side of Andy and Anderson. I certainly did not expect Anderson to be so casual. He was really getting into it. I think actually he probably joked around more than Andy, which surprised me. And then Andy, I had told him I was coming to see him back when I was in New York doing Watch What Happens Live. And he was so nice. We were able to go after the show and chat a little bit and take photos. So it was a great weekend. And my best friend Will had a really nice birthday. I was able to take my dog Halo with us too. He travels well. So he hung out in the hotel. And then we took him all around Tampa. Now I'm back in Melbourne. And I want to talk about some of the yachts you see on this week's Below Deck. We are anchored right out front of St. Bart's, which is called Gustavia. And it's pretty much the see and be seen place in the Caribbean for that time of year. And you'll notice that the deckhands mention one yacht named Eclipse. Now, Motor Yacht Eclipse is currently one of the largest yachts and the most expensive yacht. And it's pretty much the standard of excellence for all yacht owners. And it has every amenity under the sun, including a system that can detect and destroy paparazzi camera lenses by firing lasers into any cameras that shoot in the direction of the yacht, which was actually funny because while we were filming, somebody pointed out Eclipse and one of our cameramen went to go look at it. I was like, you better be careful. And I think it's safe to assume that there aren't a whole lot of selfies being taken on Motor Yacht Eclipse. It's for privacy. And in addition to the lightsaber-like photo blockers, there are also German-built defense missiles strategically installed around the boat, panes of bulletproof glass completely surrounding the master suite, and an underwater submarine that allows complete and utter security. They can leave the boat and return to the boat without anybody even seeing them. All of these safety measures must make the Russian oligarch feel pretty comfortable and able to cut loose, which explains why the swimming pool also transforms into a dance floor. I bet you can really dance like nobody's watching when you've got Russian vodka and destructive lasers on your boat. I actually did a article for E! Online about 2 years ago comparing the best yachts in the world to celebrities. So I decided that if Motor Yacht Eclipse was a celebrity, it would be Oprah. So also on this episode of Below Deck, the big moment is when our tender, and our yacht actually, is drifting dangerously close to the Maltese Falcon. Now, I've never seen anything like this in all my years in yachting. It was a combination of factors. You know, not only was our deck crew quite inexperienced, but also the current outside of St. Bart's is known for being strong and fast. It's always ripping about 25 knots just outside of St. Bart's. And so it's kind of something that we all accept and know in yachting, but St. Bart's is so beautiful that we just deal with it. In fact, during my first season as a yachtie, I was on a charter boat and we were anchored outside of St. Bart's. And the guests had gone to shore to go shopping at the same time that I was getting my 2-hour break. And so my chief, Sue, told me I was a laundry girl. I'd been in a laundry room for a month at this time. And she said, you know, the guests are on shore. If you want to go swimming during your break, you can do that. And so I was so excited. I was counting down the hours, the minutes, until I was able to get out of my laundry hole and go for a swim. So finally, the time came for my break. I race to my cabin. I do a quick change like Superman into my bikini, and I take off running towards the swim platform. I pass a second Stu on the way, and I kind of rubbed it in her face like, ha-ha, you got to keep working. I'm going swimming. And I went to the swim platform and took a leap off the back of the boat. I came to the surface, and I saw white birds flying above me and beautiful cliffs covered in bougainvillea and all the most beautiful yachts in the world around me, and thought, this is why I am in yachting. I am living life. People back home are in a cubicle, and look at where I am. And just as I was enjoying my surroundings so much, I turned around and looked and realized, oh, wow, the boat I work on, it seems pretty far away. How'd that happen? And then I started to swim back towards the boat, and I realized, oh, man, this current is really strong. Then panic set in, and I realized that I was not just taking an enjoyable swim, I was actually swimming for my life at this point. And then I remembered, in my haste to jump off the boat, had I told anyone but the second Stu that I was going for a swim? Did the captain know? Did anybody even care that I was being swept out to sea? Would they even notice? So for about 20 minutes, I am swimming with all my might just to get back to the boat, and it was hard. But finally, I made it back to the boat. But because I didn't tell anybody but the second Stu that I was going for a swim, there was no swim ladder down. So now I am hanging off the back of the swim platform of this yacht. I'm so exhausted from the swim, and I have no energy to lift myself back up onto the swim platform. So now I'm starting to think, oh my gosh, what if the charter guests come back from shopping and they see the third stewardess hanging off the back of the yacht like a drowned rat? That's not a good look. And then I started to think, oh my gosh, what if the captain decides to move the boat? I'm going to be sucked up into the turbines of this yacht. I could just see myself like on the yachting magazine in the next issue, like world's dumbest stewardess dies because she goes for a swim without telling anyone. So for the next 20 minutes, I'm panicking. I'm just hoping the charter guests do not return and see me in my bikini, because I'd also gained some weight just eating private chef food all the time. Not the cutest look. So after 25 minutes of trying to pull myself up onto the swim platform, I was trying to stand on a rope that was holding onto a jet ski and like balance like a tightrope, but I kept falling. Finally, a deckhand came out and said, Kate, do you need a hand? I was like, oh, Max, thank you so much. Yes, please help me. He lifted me up onto the swim platform. But what wasn't so great was that he was kind of laughing a lot. And I asked Max when I could finally get my breath back. I was like a dead fish on the swim platform. Max, why are you laughing? He says, because I've been watching you for about 20 minutes. I, for one, can attest to the fact that there is a very, very strong current outside of St. Bart's. And that was one of the factors that led to the mayhem that you see on this week's episode of Below Deck. I thought we were going to crash into the Maltese Falcon. And I can just imagine what the crew of the Maltese Falcon was doing. Now that you know all about that, let's talk to Chris Brown. What's up, guys? Like I said, I've got Chris Brown joining me today on the new episode of After Deck. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great. That's really good. I'm a happy camper.
Oh, good. Where are you right now?
I'm at a buddy's house in Thousand Palms. Like, my folks are in Palm Springs, so I'm just crashing with them for a little bit. I'm in Palm Springs.
Palm Springs? Is that California. Where you were born and raised?
Born and raised in Palm Springs. Lived here for 22 years, and then I moved to Mammoth and started snowboarding every day, and then just pursued a life of happiness and things that make me smile, and I've been doing that for a while.
Oh, wow. Okay. What was it like growing up in Palm Springs?
It was boring. It's been more amazing and more fun in the past 5-10 years, but growing up here, it's mostly a retirement community with people golfing and playing tennis and not much going on for the youngins.
Oh, that sounds like Florida, where I grew up.
I'm sure you can relate.
Yeah. It was funny. The first time I ever traveled out of Florida when I was younger, I went to Texas to visit my cousins. And the first thing I thought was, when I was going around Texas, San Antonio, where are all the old people? Because I was so used to growing up around old people, I thought that was like a normal ratio of the population, that you would have mostly old people. And then I went to Texas and I was like, do they keep them like somewhere? Are they hiding? What's going on?
That's hilarious. That similar sentiment growing up.
Well, are you ready to talk about your Below Deck experience?
I believe I'm pretty much as ready as I'm going to get. So, yeah, let's do it.
Are you excited? Why don't you tell me What's been the feedback, honestly, from your like mom, your friends? What's going on?
My folks, I don't watch the show anymore. My folks stopped watching. It was really rough for them to see, like, episode 2 was kind of brutal on me. It was absolutely brutal on me.
What happened to episode 2? Was that when you were sleeping?
No, that was episode 3. Episode 2 was just me talking about myself and alcohol and women the entire time.
Are they just not, they're still very Christian, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, they went to church this morning. It's, yeah, sure.
Okay, but were they comfortable with the fact that you're like, you know what, I gave the whole being celibate thing a good run, but now I'm gonna not do that? Were they like, oh, okay? Or they
kinda... We haven't really talked about it. It was just more the brashness that I stated a couple facts that they were upset with, and they communicated it to my brother, and then my brother was like, yeah, mom's kind of mad at you because you said some obnoxious things on TV. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not proud of that.
Okay, well, did you see any cool places while we were filming? St. Martin's, St. Bart's? You got to stay in St. Bart's.
For one night when I was depressed because I just got fired in front of 3 million people. So, like, not the best, you know?
Yeah, that would put a damper on things, I guess. What did you think would happen when you came to the show? You thought that you would be the greenest deckhand, that you would learn along the way, that you'd be a little comedic relief.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much my role in everything in life. I make people laugh. I'm pretty entertaining.
Okay, and modest?
And, yeah, very much so.
Well, did you know that my brother was in the seminary to be a priest?
Yeah, you told me one of our nights when we were going out in the back of the cab. We talked about it.
Yeah, well, guess what happened when I got back from filming? So it takes 7 years to be in the seminary, and that was his lot in life. Like, every family reunion, wedding, gathering, everybody like, oh, you're almost a priest, how long now? So we were right at the finish line for him, and he decides, you know what, I'm not sure I want to be a priest, like, not long before graduation, which, I mean, I don't blame him. I wouldn't take those vows. But then my sister got married in July, and he brought a date to the wedding. By October, they're engaged, and they're getting married this December.
Damn.
Well, he's waiting until marriage to, you know, consummate the marriage. So I think that speeds up things, you know? But it's kind of awkward for me because he didn't really do many favors. Now the Catholic priest in my family is getting married before me.
Like, you're funny, Kate.
It is kind of funny. But I understand. My mom called when you were we were doing our sound check, and she's on her way to Mass. So I understand what it's like to have a more religiously adherent family and then to be on television kind of doing things that are not so much in line with their beliefs.
I'm pretty, like, who I am is just open and honest, and that comes a lot from having a relationship with Christ and everything like that. So, it's weird. I don't know.
Lean back and let's talk about where it all started. You think your priorities are out of whack?
Not my priorities. I want to say my value center. And this is kind of a newer thought, and I'm going to toss it around with a couple of friends. But just, like, the stuff I find myself talking about and the way I interact with people and then the things I pursue in life at times, I don't know. I don't feel like it's the best version of me, and I feel like maybe some therapy could help me identify flaws or areas that I'm blind and arrogant to, and then adjust and go from there.
Was it because of Below Deck that you were made aware of these possible areas of improvement?
It's definitely brought it to the forefront. Yeah, after, like, when Below Deck aired and I watched myself, especially like episode 2, I was like, that guy's a fucking twat. I don't like him at all. I don't recognize the guy, the Chris Brown on TV. Maybe in these later episodes when I'm really funny, but for the most part, I don't know who that guy is. So it was interesting. And I was in Idaho visiting a really good friend, and he was like, dude, that's pretty much you. And I was like, I don't want to accept that reality.
Do you think it might be because you were, like, abstinent and celibate for so long that now you're just excited about it, so you bring it up more often than other people because you're just now getting into it?
No, I think I bring it up more often or often enough because I just don't mind talking about it, and it's a normal part of life, and sex is always a very powerful emotion and...
Yeah, but how old are you?
A lot of 28.
So, but it's only been a really normal part of your life for 2 years, where when I was 20...
I feel like that's plenty of time, especially when I'm 28, but...
Yeah, but maybe, when I was 28, it had been a normal part of my life for a decade.
Yeah.
Now, you introduced yourself on this season of Below Deck as Chris Brown, first and last name. Did you do that because it was kind of proper to do first and last name, or was it really because... you have the same name as a infamous celebrity R&B musician?
That's twofold. It works. Like, people remember my name. It's unfortunate. But it makes it's memorable. I believe life's either memorable or forgettable. I've done a lot of life and I've forgotten it. And I kind of only value the stuff that I can remember at this point. So I do my best in everything I do and who I am to be memorable. And that's one of the ways I introduce myself, to try and be memorable.
Now, at what age did having the name Chris Brown, because Chris Brown's kind of a new famous person. He's only within the last decade, I guess. So you were just growing up, being normal Chris Brown, and then this musician comes out who's Chris Brown, and he got very popular. How did your life change when that happened?
So strangely, I don't know why, but people were already referring to me as Chris Brown, full name. I think it might be because I have a huge ego and a bunch of personality, even when I'm in middle school. But I was in middle school, and then for the next year and a half, everyone was like, hey, did you know there's a rapper named Chris Brown? And then that has been a cornerstone of my life ever since. I have to stay up to date on what he's doing.
So how do you do that? You follow him on Twitter? You, like, have Google alerts?
I don't care that much. It's just the information. I don't know. I'll be on Reddit or on Google or something.
It's like you have an evil twin. That's kind of funny. Well, besides, you know, conversations and introductions, having the same name as the infamous Chris Brown, have you ever gotten any perks from it, like on paper, like if you make a hotel reservation or a flight booking that we get upgrades because they think it might be the other one?
That sounds fantastic. I wish that was my reality. Usually I just show up to restaurants and the hostesses are really disappointed.
Are you sure they're not relieved?
These days I question my ability to judge people, so they could very well be relieved. But they usually seem disappointed.
So you really haven't gotten any big perks from having the same name as a celebrity beside yourself?
No, other than it's memorable. And, like, for the most part, when I introduce myself to people, they don't forget my name. If I had a different name, I would still most likely say my full name. I'm trying to cut it back now because I'm realizing how obscure and weird it is, and like how sometimes it doesn't benefit me all the time. I'm older, you know?
It definitely stands out. I'm just not sure it stands out in a positive way. But yeah. I think you're lovely.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting fun fact. Okay. Would you ever change your name?
I love money. So for a price, I don't know, 10 grand or something. My brother's having a kid. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who are having kids, and I've been offering them thousands of dollars, like somewhere between the $3,000 and $5,000 range to name their child. Nobody's taken me up on it yet, but I'm willing to pay somebody that I know, maybe a kid I'll interact with, the opportunity to name them.
You would name their child, or you would sell them your name?
Like, a buddy was like, dude, I'll let you name my kid for $5,000, but we didn't talk terms. So I was like, I'm going to give you $5,000.
So you would pay your friend $5,000 to name their child. What would you name their daughter?
I'm a jokester, so I just want to pay someone a bunch of money to name their kid Chris Brown, all 10 characters.
Okay, well, this is
funny.
My
dad's name is Buff.
Buff? Buff Brown?
And B-U-F-F. It runs in the family.
Buff Brown.
And then I flex.
Buff Brown. Okay. Is that short for something?
It's a strong name. No, it's not. Everyone has that. But I think it's a great name. And I love my dad, of course. So I'm naming I fall in love.
Right.
And have a kid. I'm naming my child Buff Brown because I think it's awesome. But I kind of want to, like, name someone else's kid Buff. I think that'd be cool too.
I had a Shih Tzu named Buffy. Well, speaking of weird names, actually, I was at an event last night and I met this guy in line for a drink, and his name was Joe King. That's kind of genius, right?
Did he use his full name when he introduced himself?
Yes, he did. And then I said, oh, so Joseph? He's like, nope, just Joe. Joe King.
Kate.
What?
Whenever you're ready to have kids, I got $5,000 on naming your baby. At least $5,000. We'll see how I'm doing financially at that point. but it might go up.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something I'll keep in my back pocket. I'm really excited about that. So have you ever had a bad experience because of your name, Chris Brown?
No. I mean, I got a pretty negative reaction from it on Below Deck. I think it works better in person, but I even think you were caught off guard. I was nervous walking on board. I'd never been on camera. I'd never worked on a yacht, and I didn't know what I was doing. So you default into your most comfortable state,
sure.
Which for me is being out obnoxious,
yeah,
overcompensating.
I think once your nerves subside, because it is nerve-wracking going on to a yacht and a TV show for the first time, reality show. I almost had a panic attack my first day. I think that once your nerves subsided, we got to see the real Chris, and it was, I love that Chris. Let's get into this latest episode, speaking of Below Deck. How did you feel when you were asked to sleep in the crew mess?
Thought it was complete shit. I wanted to walk off the boat. I was hammered. I went in and out and partied the night before. So it was just a weird mix of emotions. And it didn't seem fair. Like, and I'm a light sleeper, and I need my sleep, and I haven't been sleeping on the show in life. I had not been sleeping well. So to take that from me as well was really pushing me over the edge, and not anything that I signed up for, not anything I'm willing to tolerate or deal with.
Right. And but then when you went from the crew mess to the bilge, was that an improvement?
Okay, I'll be completely honest with you. I slept in a hammock for like 2+ years when I was in college. And you know, I had a pirate-themed room with like $40 in pennies and a treasure chest on top. And I thought it was great. And it was cool. So I slept like a dream in that hammock. There wasn't much like room to sway and move around, but I had my own room. There were Ritz crackers and like baked beans within an arm's reach. Mm-hmm. And aside from the light pouring in at the top, it was great.
Oh, I already told Captain Lee, if I ever work on Valor again, I'm going to make the bilge my room. It's the biggest crew area. It's privacy. You would hear the water hitting the side of the boat. It's really nice. And then you got snacks and drinks. It's great. I think you really came out top. Well, on the bottom.
Yeah, it was. It like, that's, you know, that's turning a bad situation into a gold one.
Yep. Why did you have a pirate-themed college dorm room? That sounds weird.
It is weird. I don't know. I wanted to sleep in a hammock. I read up on it, and I thought it'd be good, and then I did. And then my buddy was – we shared a room with – yeah, my brother had a house. We were renting a house in Palm Springs. And I just – I don't know. I wanted to sleep in a hammock, and I was celibate. So, listen, like, I was trying to get down with chicks. So
okay,
I didn't,
that makes
just
sense.
Me sleeping
now
by
that
myself.
Makes sense. You could sleep in a hammock because it doesn't matter. It's always going to be just you in bed.
Yeah.
So then you're like, let's theme it out. So you had a treasure chest on a shelf with a lot of pennies?
Yeah, like, I don't know, pennies and like coins from around the world, because I was still traveling a fair bit back then.
So what, you were thinking about being a chef, and then you were like, no.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed taking care of people, accommodating, serving people. I typically connect well with people, not all the time, clearly, but typically. So I tried cooking, and I had a passion for food, and I really enjoyed it. I just found out that I absolutely suck at cooking. Like, I'm a culinary arts dropout, and it was kind of a hassle to come upon that realization. And I was really young and didn't realize that if you just stick with something and you work at it, you'll eventually get good, and you're supposed to suck at everything when you first started, like yachting or cooking, whatever, you know. But I ended up, it wasn't the right path for me, and ended up quitting, and now I do a lot of like front of house, like serving or bartending work, and it's a much better fit for me.
Yeah, actually, I think that's interesting. I think that was a good call on your part. You know, when you're younger and you're trying to figure out what you want to do with life, sometimes you have to try things, and it takes a lot of courage to realize, oh, wait, never mind. This is not for me. Let me go back and choose something new. And I think your talents do lie at front of the house. Tell me about your new job. Aren't you going to be doing customer service in Las Vegas?
I hate to toot my own horn.
Toot it.
I'm just
beep,
really
beep.
I'm the best. I'm the best server on the planet. I confidently believe I'm one of the best servers on the planet. And that's what you're supposed to do. If you're good at something, like, own it, you know? It's, I don't know. Anyways, I just got a really good job at Cut at the Palazzo, and I'm stoked about the opportunity I got.
Well, congratulations. I think you're going to do very well in Vegas. And I think that's the perfect place for you to be. And I agree that your personality, your strengths would be in the service position. And it's not just waiting tables. It's a whole vibe. You're good at charming people, making customers feel welcome, taken care of, giving them a laugh. You know, you're good at that.
Yep. At the core, I'm an entertainer, and that's what I enjoy, entertaining people. My dad served for 15 or 20 years before he went on and does what he does now in heating and air conditioning. And he's just like, dude, Chris, you're really good. You entertain people. And he has tons of stories of him doing very memorable things for the guests. And to me, that's awesome.
How did you feel when I asked you to be involved in the casino night theme party on charter? Did you love that? Were you like, yay, I get to actually use my talents? Considering the charter prior, I asked Bruno to come like disco dance and he wasn't so down.
Yeah, Bruno's not that tight. Also, those shorts, like, I came through on those shorts for Bruno to wear on sushi night. That shit was hilarious.
Oh, those were yours? Like, the Star Speedos?
Yeah, I had a red pair and a blue pair, and I brought them because I thought it would get used eventually.
Well, you're very wise, a wise packer. Clearly, there's a lot of issues on deck this season, on Below Deck. What was your first impression of EJ?
Not good. He's Canadian, so he's super nice and accommodating, but you're walking into a shitstorm, and I don't know. I'm like, you're making me think about it right now. I'm physically kind of stressed out about it because it's such a weird dynamic of, like, I'm not meshing well with the deck team at this point. Nico is not doing a great job leading and having tons of issues. Obviously, Captain brings in EJ with zero notice, doesn't communicate anything to anybody. This dude shows up, and then I'm gonna charm him anyways. And then I don't know. It was weird. It sucked.
You thought
I lost my bed to that.
That's true. Well, I feel like you were pretty kind to him considering he took over your bed. But you did think he was just a really overly nice guy when you first met him, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Watching the episodes now, I see a side of him in interviews that seems a little bit less nice.
More brash.
More like assertive, edgy, but like, I don't know. I didn't think that about EJ. EJ was always like, cool beans, righty-o, okie dokie, Roger Dodger, Mr. Rogers. But but then in interviews, he's like, not on my deck. I don't think so. Like, there was a darker side, which I don't know if I respect it, but I think I do.
I never saw it in the moment. It was just like, we're going to have to figure out how to make this work. And I'm like, kind of like, dude, fuck that. Like, I'm getting absolutely screwed here. I'm kind of checked out anyways. I'm still willing to work and do my job, but I can see the writing on the wall. But dude, you're walking into a storm. You better be ready to, like, actually grab the reins, lay down some rules, establish some guidelines, which never happened.
Oh, do you think he was too nice coming in?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay. Do you think that Nico had a right to be kind of annoyed or insulted?
Yeah. Nico has every right to be. Definitely, I'd take the insulted route, and annoyance comes with that, but it's like, you've been hired to do a job. We no longer trust you and your ability to do this job, and we're not going to talk to you about it. We're just going to bring someone in to undermine you, and they outrank you at the same time.
Okay. Do you think that out of all the deckhands to be cut loose, do you think that it should have been you, or do you think that it should have been someone else?
I would choose someone else. It's hard.
Okay. Fine. Who would you choose?
Bruno's the weakest link, guaranteed.
I agree. I wish we would have kept you. I don't think that you worked less than Bruno necessarily. I think that you just happened to, you know, vocalize and verbalize when you weren't working, but not because you weren't working, just because you were trying to be funny. I think your sense of humor, your self-deprecating sense of humor got misunderstood as a lack of caring about your job.
He'll also just like go clean a window that he's already cleaned six times that day. I would much rather do some meaningful work or take some time for myself so that I'm able to do meaningful work later in the day rather than clean a window that's already been cleaned half a dozen times in the same day. So it's just like, I value actual work versus busy work. And if someone values busy work for the sake of it being busy work, I'm going to clash with them, and I'm probably going to call them on their shit, and it's not going to go well for me, but it's not a good fit anyways. Like, I just didn't fit well.
This episode of Below Deck is actually one of the most intense of the season because the Maltese Falcon, that was crazy. First of all, the Maltese Falcon is the most stunning yacht on the planet, in my opinion. It's gorgeous. It's perfection. It is science and art combined. It's unbelievable. Stunning.
Yeah, it's a gem.
And you would know because you had a very close look at it, didn't you?
I was actually on the bow when we had our close encounter with the Maltese Falcon. But to get that close to a world-famous yacht, $50 million yacht, is absolutely insane.
Honey, it was more like $250 million. I'm telling you. But yeah, we got very close. What do you think happened with the tender on the swim platform? And then it had no keys.
So I train people at my restaurant, and I've been there for a long time. You set up like procedures and protocols, and you do it this way every single time, and you never fucking deviate from the way you do it. And here on the Valor, we're making shit up as we go every single time. Nico never takes the time to be like, this is how you do it. We're going to do it this way. Never deviate from this. That's my like leadership style and the way I work well. And we never have those guidelines, those boundaries. So everyone's just doing whatever they want. So it's not a surprise that we're missing keys or that we're like moving the boat for no reason at an obscure time.
Here's a question. Where were the keys? In the locker, in the lazarette?
I didn't have any. They just didn't give me any responsibility.
Okay, but
I never got a time to shine.
Okay. No, you never. You did. Your humor shined, and I gave you a time to shine when you became the casino theme night dealer. But here's what I'm saying. So now Nico is in the tender. EJ is in the smaller boat with the two jet skis towing behind, and that's when Nico realizes he has no keys. Now they are drifting closer and closer to Maltese Falcon, which, trust me, there is no crazier current in the world than the Port Gustavia right outside St. Barts. It is always ripping at like 20 knots. So now Nico is in the tender with no keys, dead engine, drifting towards Maltese Falcon. But then it was like EJ was trying to tow him around using the little boat. Why didn't someone just go grab the keys and give it to him? I felt he would have been... Do you know? Do you not know? You probably don't know.
What? No, I literally don't know, but also welcome to my life. Like, why was there a very simple solution, and we took the most fucked up option we could to have, like, a very disappointing result? Like,
well, we didn't.
Together.
No, well, we didn't have the Maltese Falcon, so actually, that was a good thing, but if you could go...
It's not a good look, though.
Oh, it's I just can imagine all of the crew on board the Maltese Falcon. They were all standing inside there in the wheelhouse. They were on charter. They had charter guests on board as well.
Yeah.
Just in the main salon, looking through the windows at like, oh my God, it's happening. This is where it happens. Here they come.
They moved their tent to the other side because they didn't trust our ability to navigate a yacht.
Oh, I know. If you could go back and do it all again on good old Motor Yacht Valor, would you have done anything differently?
I operated and I acted how I would 99 times out of 100. And I don't know if that's my proudest moment now because of the result and everything, but I was set up to fail. I don't think I was given the tools to succeed, and I just kind of ended up taking the fall for, you know, a lot of other shortcomings on the boat. Bruno and Baker and Nico not being a good leader. Like, all this shit, I just ended up happening to me. So if I could change it, would I?
Well, yeah, we all know that there were other circumstances, but looking back at your own time on Valor, is there anything after reflection you would have done differently yourself?
I talk about myself so much. It's a quality I'm really trying to work on these days, and focus on the other person and not be creepy and weird around girls because my dad says my game sucks. Which, when your dad tells you you're bad with women and you're 28 and you're single, that's not, like, nobody feels good after that.
Well, I'll give you this much. So when I first started in yachting, I can sympathize with you because I was like, what, I work 8 hours? That's not enough? Of course I want to take a nap. Like, I worked 8 hours. What more do you want from me? I'd come from service and bartending during college, so I just could not understand. Like, I'm already living here. I mean, I worked my 8 hours. I thought that was it. So it's a really big adjustment for first-time yachties. So I think that a charter yacht is not the place to get used to the yachting industry.
We didn't even have charter guests when I took my nap.
Now that I'm a yachtie, I can explain to you why that was horrible, but I get what you're saying, but it was still bad.
I'm well aware of, you reap what you sow every single time. I definitely messed up and made a mistake.
No. Here's your big mistake, Chris. If you want to have a sneaky nap on a day when we don't have charter guests, the mistake wasn't taking the nap. The mistake was taking the nap in your cabin. What you do is you go to where like the rib is on the main deck or the bridge deck aft, and it's got that cover on it. You get up under the cover and you sleep in there on deck, and you keep your radio by your head so that when they call you, you'd be like, oh yeah, right here detailing the rib.
For my second or third adventure in yachting, that's where I'm napping, Kate.
Oh, so do you think you're gonna try yachting ever again, or are you done?
Yeah, never again, unless someone offers me an obnoxious amount of money. But it's like having a girlfriend who cheats on you and breaks your heart. And that was my first time in yachting. And then she changed a little bit and seemed cool, so she invited me back into her life. And then she cheated on me and broke my heart again. And then people are like, you going to go for it a third time? I've learned at this point. I'm a little wiser. I don't think it's the industry for me. I have really good opportunities in other industries. And there's more to life than just yachting. Like, yachting's cool for the right person, but it's not cool for me. And that's fine.
Yeah, that takes us back to when you left culinary school. Sometimes you have to know when to hold them and when to fold them. What have you been up to since you left Valor?
Got fired off the Valor. I spent a night in St. Bart's where I called my folks. I flew to Colombia. I was in Bogota for a couple days, and I went to Medellin and partied for like a week. And did some cool stuff like paragliding and just stuff you do in Medellin. Then I went up to Cartagena, also still in Colombia. Then I rented a 54-foot sailing yacht. I chartered a yacht with like seven other people. And we sailed from Cartagena, Colombia to Panama City, Panama.
Did it come with a crew or were you the deckhand there too?
I was actually put in the crew mess is where I slept, and it was so funny to me because it was very reminiscent and familiar. It was a female captain and a female first mate, German and Argentinian, and they were awesome. And it's a backpacker thing. You can't go through the Darien Strait in between Panama and Colombia. There's just literally pretty much no way to do it. So you either fly or take a boat. And so they're like, for like $500, $600, very cheap, you can party for 5 days on this sailing yacht, go to some of the most gorgeous islands on the planet. I've been to a lot of islands at this point. San Blas Islands are absolutely phenomenal. And then we'll drop you off in Panama City, and then you can, you know, continue north from there. I was flying out of Panama City. When I went to Colombia, it was just, I'm going to travel until I'm good again, because I was pretty emotionally distraught and like, I was not well. I was like, right after I got fired, I'm waking up in Bogota, Colombia in a hostel. Legitimately, it fucked me a lot more than I thought it was going to, and it's been a really strange part of my life.
I think that whenever you have a weird life experience to travel and get out of your normal zone, comfort zone, and get a fresh perspective, I think you did the right thing. So you went to Colombia right after St. Bart's, and then you went through that canal on a sailboat. And then where'd you go after that?
Then I went back to, and saw my family, obviously. Then I went back to work in Mammoth for about a month. My birthday was coming up, so myself and seven friends went to Tequila, Mexico, where the 90% of tequila in the world comes from.
Tequila, your favorite.
I'm a creature of habit. It was really good. I learned an incredible amount. I met a couple heads of industry who were like, hey, when you open a tequila bar in Stockholm, let us know. I have a couple of like really good contacts now. It was, and we partied. It was my birthday. It was insane. It was so much fun.
When's your birthday?
April 28th, end of April.
April 28th. I'm a Taurus. So are you still planning on eventually opening up a tequila bar in Stockholm?
It's on the agenda. It's just, I don't have much capital right now, and it's impossible for me to get a work visa in Sweden. So it's on hold, but you gotta have dreams in life. You gotta have stuff to go for.
Oh, I cannot agree more. And I love that. So now you've got this great job in Vegas where you can get the capital. And I think you can figure out a work visa in Sweden. I mean, I know a sailor that looks a lot like Jesus. He might be able to make miracles happen.
Sounds fantastic to me.
Well, I really feel like 5 years from now or less, I'm going to check in on Chris Brown, you, and I'm going to see that you have some hot, blonde, blue-eyed Swedish wife, a bunch of little wild babies, and a successful tequila bar in Stockholm. I see it happening.
It'd be a surprise to no one.
And I will only charge you $500 to name your child.
Ooh, I might take you up on that.
I'm going to name it Violet. Violet Brown.
I'd like outside advice.
I love giving it, so call me anytime. So you'll never go back to yachting. I'm not sure yachting's the path for you, and that's not an insult. I think it's just...
It's a fit thing. Like, if it doesn't work, if a relationship's bad, get out of it. Never engage in it again.
Hey,
but there's tons of...
Guess where I don't fit in? Marathons, 5Ks, no thanks. CrossFit, see you later. Vegan restaurants, nope. Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking your time to chat with me. I am certainly going to miss you on this season of Below Deck, but I'm so glad to hear you are doing well and you've got amazing things. I think working at the Palazzo in Vegas is really going to be a game changer for you.
Yeah, it was really good to catch up. I'm glad we got to connect. And
yeah, keep me updated on how things go once you move over to Vegas, and then I'll be there for the opening of your tequila bar, I'm sure.
I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun.
So if you've been listening to the previous episodes of After Deck, you know that every week we like to choose a yachty of the week and a dinghy of the week. According to our After Deck tweets polls, Chris was actually voted on by you guys as the dinghy of the week, and I just didn't feel like it was appropriate to bring that up with him. I mean, he got fired on national television, and you can tell from our interview that he's actually quite likable and has good intentions. According to the poll on After Deck Tweets, I actually won Yachty of the Week, but I don't think that's fair either. So I'm going to go ahead and just decide on my Yachty and Dinghy of the Week. Now, when I was growing up, every night at dinner, my mom would make us say our high of the day and the low of the day. When we would play high-low at dinner, you would get bonus points if your high and your low were the same thing. So for this week's Yachty and Dinghy of the Week, I'm going to say that Matt, Chef Matt, is both. He was a real dinghy for not having lobster for the lunch he was to prepare for the guests in like an hour, but he's the yachty of the week because when those live lobsters came on board, the guests were already at the table. I thought, there is no way this guy's going to be able to put out edible versions of these sea creatures in any kind of quick time. But for some miraculous reason, within 7 minutes, he had those lobsters butterflied, cooked to perfection, and they were delicious. So congratulations, Matt. You were the dinghy of the week and the yachty of the week. Yay for you. I want to thank Chris for coming on to chat with us. I hope you guys all got a sense of how he has good intentions, and he really was an enjoyable crew member. If you like to hear more stories from my early yachting career, you can read all about them in my book, Lucky Charming, and I have the audio version coming out later this month. Follow me at Kate_Chastain. Next week, when we go over episode 7 of Below Deck Season 5, I have a special surprise guest that you guys are going to want to hear, and he's going to join us to talk After Deck and what he's been up to lately here on After Deck.
You are now listening to the After Deck.